Jimmy, thanks for being on the podcast.
No, I appreciate you having me. I really do. I'm super thankful for it, and appreciate all you do for young coaches out there.
Man, congratulations on the new job with the Nets. I know part of that adjustment has been getting used to the New York traffic, right?
Yeah, it's. I appreciate that. I'm thrilled to be out here in New York and working with Brooklyn and out in Long Island. But yeah, the traffic is definitely a monster for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, tell us how you got there. I mean, I feel like you've had a pretty quick rise in the profession. And just 4 years ago, you get your first job at the Division I level. Give us a quick recap of your career and how you've gotten to where you are now.
Yeah, it's been kind of crazy. I started off as a student manager at UMass, my undergrad. Knew I wanted to coach and everything and really wanted to get into it. And I ended up being a high school coach in Amherst, where UMass is located. Spent 2 years there as a volunteer assistant for the varsity team. Made the jump to Division III, took another volunteer role just to get my foot in the door, worked for a great head coach that I'm super thankful for, allowed me to really grow and really learn under his wing. And those 3 years was truly instrumental in my growth. And I really wanted to take the next step. And for me, it was lucky enough to get a spot at Boston University, which is basically right down the street where I grew up. And I spent the last 4 years there and kind of learning how everything works on the business side of things and being around great people from staff to players to administration. And it was truly something I'm blessed with, and I couldn't be more thankful for my time there.
When did you first come to Rising Coaches? I feel like it was when you were at the Division III school, correct?
Yeah, literally it was me finishing my first year as a Division III volunteer assistant. So I didn't know anybody. I didn't know anything. And it was kind of great just kind of network. I didn't know how it kind of worked. And so going there was eye-opening for me to meet like-minded people that really helped shape my philosophy on networking, getting to know people. And that's been probably the biggest thing for me and helped progressing my career.
So how did you go from a volunteer Division III assistant to getting your foot in the door at BU? Was that a volunteer spot that you got there? Or what was the connection to the coaching staff?
Yeah, so I at the Division III level, our season started a little bit later than everybody else. So I knew at the Division I level, they're starting right about now. So we couldn't touch guys until October 15th. So I used that like month or so window to just kind of go around to different practices. And I went down to BU and just kind of talking with people and getting to know different things and seeing people in the area. And at the end of that year of kind of going around to practices and stuff like that, I knew they had a few guys leave their staff and kind of reach out to my network and see who knew who and end up kind of talking with the head coach and seeing what he was looking for. Lucky enough for me that I was able to get a video position there. And shortly after 1 year there, I was promoted to director of operations, which I was very lucky for that too. And it just kind of, like everyone says, like it's about timing, but I think I put a lot of work into it and kind of networking and doing things the right way and just trying to meet people. And it kind of shook out for me to be a good situation.
Yeah, that's a couple of things that I've always loved about you, Jimmy, is, number one, I think you've always been willing to just kind of do whatever it takes to advance in your career and get to where you're trying to go. It's clear that you got goals and your willingness to take some volunteer spots, just to get your foot in the door, understanding that that's what it takes, and coming to, Rising Coaches, not, like you said, not knowing anybody and I'm sure that could be intimidating for a lot of people, but you just kind of, were there and you said, hey, this is who I am. This is what I'm trying to do. And, it was a great addition to our conference, even from year one. And then the other thing that I think has always been impressive, Jimmy, is the time gap from when Division I schools start to Division III schools, and you took advantage of that time. I feel like that's something that you've continued to do through your career and take on different projects during you know, whatever break you may have to kind of help you gap the bridge to the next level that you're trying to go to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I think is, partly how you got the job in Brooklyn. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Like once this offseason hit at Boston University, I think going to the NBA is something I've always dreamed about doing in kind of any capacity, and always just trying to create stuff for myself to kind of learn and grow. You know, I think that's important to always have that drive to learn and see what else is out there and what people are doing. And so I try to create different things for myself that I want to see and like selfishly, like just to grow, but also be able to share it. And I try to do that as much as I can. And hopefully people want to see some of the stuff that I do. Some of the stuff can be boring, but I like to try to share as much as possible. And that's always been kind of my goal.
So give me an example of some of the special projects that you've taken on here in the last year or two.
Yeah. So this summer, and like I said, I did this kind of selfishly. I really wanted to look at the NBA and focus on like a sideline out of bounds type of package and see what teams are doing. So I kind of created this whole thing where I went to every NBA team and went through every play that they ran this season and kind of broke down their playbook and try to figure out what they're doing. And for all 30 teams, and the NBA obviously has much more side out of bounds. I think they have twice as much as they do in the college game. And I think there's a lot more that goes into it because the end of game situations, they can advance the ball. And for me, it was a way to get into seeing different quick hitter ideas. Like if there's 5 seconds left in the game, they can advance the ball and you're going to probably see some great play that you generally don't see in college. So I wanted to tap into that. And what I kind of gathered was some teams try to get certain shots for certain players. Some coaches are really creative and do things differently. And some teams just honestly try to get the ball in bounds and try to get into some type of middle ball screen. So for me, looking at that stuff, it kind of allowed me to get in the mindset of each NBA coach and try to kind of go through it and think about what works, what doesn't work, and who's stealing from who. And all right, well, Brooklyn ran this great end of game ATO, and 2 months later, Charlotte ran the same play. Well, they probably stole it from them. And that's kind of how it works, the copycat league. And you see a lot of trends. And for me, I was really able to dive in and try to learn the NBA game that way. So that's something I really a lot of time on this summer to try to, and I shared it on YouTube. So anyone wants to see that, you can definitely do so.
How long did that project take you to complete?
So it probably took 3 weeks, but it was probably like 4 hours every day of just watching film. And that's literally just 4 hours every day, each team, and just kind of going through it and making sure I didn't miss anything, because it was something that for my own development, like you can't shortchange that and don't cut corners. And it could look like the same play, but there might be a slight wrinkle, and that might be the beauty of it. And I think a lot of people would just be like, all right, they're going to run this zipper into a down screen. And all of a sudden, it's a zipper into a flare screen. And you're like, wow, why'd they do that? And I think that's what you need to really focus on. And for me, it was something that you really should pay attention to the game. And for young coaches, I think being able to watch the game and know the game, there's no better way to help progress your career in knowing the game in and out.
Did you just come up with this idea on your own, or did somebody suggest, hey, this might be a good idea for you to, dig into every single NBA team's side out of bounds arsenal? How did you come up with this?
Yeah, it was just something I did. I was kind of watching the Celtics towards the end of the season and their playoff run and just being amazed of all the stuff that he came up with. And I'm like, you know what? Like, I'm going to go through all the Celtics stuff. And then I was just then I'm watching all the Warriors stuff. And then all of a sudden I'm like, let's just do every team and really see what teams are doing. And, there's a lot of teams that run the same stuff and some teams don't, but the end of the game stuff is unbelievable. Like, who knows how long people have this stuff in their back pocket. And it's going to be a play that I created my own database of stuff that I liked from it. And it's about like 80 different sets that I like. So maybe we can adjust them every year and just kind of go from there. But I think you're not going to ever throw them out because they're good plays, no matter what defense you face.
And then what did you do? I know you, obviously you put it on YouTube, but did you present this to certain people that you had connections with, or what'd you do with all this info once you had it?
So I kind of I was trying to, at the time I didn't have a job at all, so I was trying to figure out how I could really try to both brand myself and share information and get everything out there. So I got it all done before NBA Summer League began. And when I went out to Las Vegas for Summer League, it created a lot of dialogue. I didn't realize how many people actually like watched it and seen it, and it was allowed me to have a conversation piece that I probably would never be able to have with certain people. And a lot of people had reached out to me, be like, "Oh man, like the Denver one was great. Like I'm glad you were able to do that." But it was a great way for other people to start reaching back out to me that I might have not connected with over the past year or two. And it just led to great relationships being rebuilt over time. And so that's one of the reasons why I really like to do it, is because seeing who might watch it and kind of reach out to you. And it's just another way that you can talk hoops with people. So that's kind of how it led for me in the NBA game. And people caught wind of it and they loved it. And I'd like to think that it had some relationship of how I got the job that I have, that showed that I know the game and I'm good with video. Hopefully that helped.
What was the NBA Summer League like? So basically you wanted to make the jump from college to the NBA, and so did you just show up in Vegas at the Summer League?
I kind of went there blind. I mean, I had a few connections of guys that are in the NBA and met a lot of them through Rising Coaches, to be honest. And going out there and just kind of talking to people and friends of friends and meeting each other at games and just having short conversations. You know, I never want to be the type that's just looking for a job. Like, I didn't go out there just looking for a job. It was kind of go out there and hopefully you can build some relationships organically, and hopefully they can see who I truly am as a person, not just a guy that needs a job and trying to look for a paycheck, because that wasn't my intent. It was my first chance to really go to Summer League, and being out there, just being introduced to the whole new game and being around different people that I've never been around, it was kind of being thrown back into the pond, like when I tried to get involved in college. So I try to use it and try to figure out like what makes sense of how to actually network with people that you don't even know. And luckily for me, it worked out, but it was just because I had some pre-existing relationships from guys that were in the college game that I had met through different channels and stuff like that, that allowed me to meet their friends, and it kind of led to just more of a network for myself that I could rely on going forward, and people that I think that will trust me as just as a person rather than just a basketball coach.
Is that something you'd recommend to anybody trying to make the jump into the NBA game, is go to the Summer League?
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone's there, and the people that every single person that I met that was in the NBA was awesome. Truly a great person. Like, they understood the grind and what it would take, and they definitely didn't. A lot of people don't sugarcoat like how hard it is to try to get a job. But you have to have that mindset where you're just going to work and you're going to try to make it work and figure things out. And going out there, it's all basketball. I mean, you know, people love to talk hoops, and just being present at the games, you never know who you're going to bump into, and it's just sharing general curiosity for the game and picking people's brain. And you never know, it could be like the fifth video assistant on a staff. You know, it's amazing how much that person might know or who they might know. So you got to kind of go in there without an ego and be willing to learn and just soak it up and take all the advice and stuff that you can really handle.
Going back to the project that you did on the sideline, out of bounds stuff, who was there somebody that stood out, a team that stood out, or a coach that stood out on some of the actions that they did as being just stuff that you loved, or being really creative, or things you'd never seen before? Tell us about some of your findings.
Yeah, I think what I found really interesting too was even watching Brad Stevens' stuff, which I think everyone probably has seen most of his stuff. His stuff is even different than regular type non-end-of-game situations. He's able to get different guys' shots at different times, and he's able to disguise a lot of his actions to look like something, but it's going to be a little bit different. And it could be like, oh, Kyrie's going to drive left this time. Then you realize it's going to be for a corner three for Al Horford, that is a skip pass that he didn't even see coming. So his stuff always kind of intrigues me, to say the least. But even like Dave Yeager at Sacramento, where people he probably doesn't have as much publicity, he just does things differently. It's not like your normal box alignment and they just run stuff. So I love seeing different wrinkles on stuff like that. And I think there is something to be said for teams that really focus on just trying to get the ball in bounds safely and get it into their offense, because maybe they don't put enough practice time into that series and really focus on their offense. So maybe it's just get the ball in bounds and let's get into something that all the guys know and feel comfortable doing. And I think you can go with both, you know. And some like Detroit Pistons with Stan Van Gundy, they were kind of that way where they would get the ball in bounds into like a ball screen set. And, you know, it worked for them. It's no less efficient than running some screen to screener elevator set. And I think the college game should really look into that, like just getting the ball in bounds and getting something familiar. But you can go either way. There's no right or wrong, obviously, in basketball. But I think those are the two guys that stood out to me the most.
And then you did another project, what, also during the NBA playoffs, correct?
Yeah, I did one. I seen, as did everybody probably listening, every team is switching pretty much in the NBA, and especially like the Rockets switch 1 through 5. So I created one called like Slips and Attacking the Switch. And I think you'll start to see a big trickle down in college for teams switching even off ball screens as well as ball screens, whether it's a matchup zone or man. But and I did it because I think sharing that stuff can really help grow the game, because I think a lot of teams will get a ball screen switch and then it turns into ISO basketball. But I think the college game needs some new tricks really of how to attack it. And I created this like 9-part edit. It's like 20 minutes long of how to attack the switch and slips to attack the rim and really put pressure on the defense. And whether it's attacking the big and a switch and a big is switched onto a guard or guard switched onto a big, how do you hurt that? And I think there's different ways that you can attack that switch that people might not put time into. Like they're going to run their ball screen offense, but if you never attack the switch, which teams are going to really start to do, it's going to really bog you down and lead to less effective offense. And I think coaches should really try to have a game plan for how do you attack every switch, and do you have something in your playbook that can hurt the switch, and guys kind of know rules based upon, all right, we got our point guard with the ball with a 5 man on him. Do they know the spacing concepts that you should be looking for? And or you got a small with a big guy, one of your smalls is defending a big on the block. Like, what do you do? Do you try to force feed him the ball, or do you kind of use his misdirection and let him crash the glass? And there's different like philosophies on how you want to do it. Some coaches just say, no, keep running the offense, keep running the offense. And that's fine. But I think you need to teach your players how to read those types of situations as well.
And so, what do you like the best? What did you see that worked best against switching?
You know, I think like the boomerang action is great, where guard comes off the ball screen and a big switch is onto him. He passes the ball and gets it right back, and he's able to attack the big off the catch or with a complete live dribble now. I think that's just a great, simple way, especially for the college game, that you could really implement it. In the NBA game, obviously, you have guards like Russell Westbrook and John Wall that can really exploit big guys, but that's something that's very, very simple. And I think refusing a ball screen, if you know teams are going to switch and they get very lazy at the point of attack, and if you just refuse it and you can blow by your own man, that's a great way to kind of catch them off guard, because they're just expecting a switch, and then the guard's going to fight a big guy on the block, so he's not even ready for it. And if you can get your guard to refuse it quickly, and it can put a lot of pressure on the weak side defense, causing rotations and long closeouts. So I think that's something that can be really helpful too.
Do you see the boomerang action being used at all in college?
You know, I really don't. Maybe here and there, but definitely not enough. Like you'll see it, like look to start to take shape, but then it never really matriculates. You know, like the guard will just pass the ball up and like it'll kind of drift away. And you know, it's something that I think, well, if he just stays there and the other players have the awareness to give him the ball back and use that space to hopefully attack a big and draw help, and he can drive and kick. I think it's, you know, that might negate a lot of the switching that you might see and be able to get back to the offense that you want to run.
You know, some of these concepts, you know, I think it's really simple. And obviously, you see boomerang in every NBA game, right?
Right.
So I think some of these concepts, and just talking, you know, we were at the retreat, the Rising Coaches Retreat, this May at Belmont, and we were talking to some NBA guys, and, you know, another concept that they talked about against the switch is to go, you know, right into floppy action, you know.
Right.
And I think some of those things, you know, at the pro level, the guys have such high basketball IQs and maybe can pick up on those things so quickly where – I don't know. Do you think maybe in the college game, you guys aren't that advanced and maybe don't recognize those things as fast?
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely probably 95% of it. And that's why I would challenge a lot of coaches to say, like, all right, I'm going to put this set in knowing that they're going to switch and just to put our guys in the position to hopefully succeed. Like, build in a play that's like a boomerang action, where they don't even have to make the read, but you know they're going to switch the ball screen, just preparing for that game, just to put your guys in that situation. Like, all right, you're going to have the court spread with a big guy on you. Can you beat him to the paint, basically, and then draw the help and make the play, or can you just finish? I think that's something that – or maybe posting up a smaller guy with one of your bigger guys, and maybe he doesn't have to catch it on the block, but just giving him the ball is going to draw an extra defender. And just doing that will allow you to kind of create a scramble situation. And it'd be something very simple. The IQ thing is huge, no question. And I think as coaches, we'd have to put these guys in position to succeed. And once they hopefully able to understand the concepts, it'll start to happen kind of organically as the season goes along. They're, all right, they're going to switch. Like, I need to get the ball back with space and spread the court accordingly.
So if you were to get like a head Division III job tomorrow back at back at your old stomping grounds, are these things you try to incorporate, you know, at any level?
Yeah, it definitely would be, you know, because I would never want to go into a game and a team switching and be like, oh, man, I really wish I did this. And I think it's something you need to be prepared for, whether it's 1-4 or 1-5, because a lot of teams run ball screen offenses now. And teams are switching 1-4, but you still have your four-man setting ball screens, and the ball just gets swung side to side, and the guys don't really recognize what's happening. Like, why don't I have a driving angle? But as a coach, you got to say, like, this is what they're going to do, and, like, hopefully you can give them, like, two nuggets out of what you're going to run that might be different game to game. But I think you still want to keep it simple. But at the same time, teach your players, all right, well, now you got a 6'8", 250-pound guy covering you, your best driver. You got to put him in position to succeed. And I think that's something you should really look to add to any playbook at any level.
How did slips fare in your project against switching?
Yeah, that's something that's huge. You know, I think and it can be any position now. Like, you'll see some fours with the ball and one slipping them, or it could be the five slipping it, especially against a team like the Rockets, where Capella will switch onto a guard. You know, it's something actually we talked about as a staff today in Brooklyn. And the concept that I really like is slipping the re-ball screen. I think you see a lot in college basketball. All right, you got the switch. There's a big guy covering a guard, and the guard calls for another ball screen just to have the guard switch back onto him. And that's a great opportunity for a switch, because guard wants to switch and the big both wants to switch. So if you ran like a ball screen set and you got the switch and then sent the big guy back out there to set it and slip that one, I think that can really cause a lot of miscommunication, because both those guys are expecting another switch, and it puts a lot of pressure on the defense to not mess that one up.
I like that. I feel like that's a little counterintuitive, but would definitely – like you say, create some confusion defensively.
Yeah.
I guess let me go back to this project. What did you draw from? Were you going straight from the Houston Rockets and seeing what teams did against them? Or did you just kind of look at, again, every NBA team? Or what did you draw from on this one?
Yeah, I really started with the Rockets defensively and what was going to hurt them. You know, because I think there's some games that they were super successful and other games that, hey, they might not have had it. So I started with that in mind and trying to see what teams are trying to do. And that kind of led to probably 80% of my answers or so. And that I want to watch guys that slipped from different types of actions, like Klay Thompson. He sets a lot of screens for Steph Curry coming off, and he slips out of them a lot, and it creates this, like, do you leave Klay Thompson open? Do you leave Steph Curry open? Like, what do you do? And obviously those two are maybe the best shooters of all time, but it allows you to think a little bit, you know, and I have kind of player development mindset with that. Like, all right, we'll reverse engineer this and think about how we can incorporate this into player development. And all right, he's going to slip out of it. So what's the footwork look like? And that's how I started kind of really looking at the game and how could I add this to my player development package when I work out a player that might be a really great shooter, and how do you get him a shot, you know? And a lot of times it involves slipping to the 3-point line and then teaching him how to play off a closeout. And so that's how I kind of try to devise that plan. But it was mostly beginning with the Rockets and seeing what teams were doing against them and a lot of what the Warriors are running and stuff like that.
And you mentioned, you know, some of the stuff that, you know, your conversation you had with the staff today in Brooklyn. What are some of the stuff you've been doing with the Nets in the short time that you've been there?
Yeah, so basically kind of wrapping up like my third full week out here in Brooklyn. We really have been preparing the guys for training camp beginning next week. And pretty much the whole team's kind of been around and doing different types of player development workouts with the players, from our top players all the way down to our guys that are going to be with us in the G League. And it's really focused player development every day. And it could be something just small as shooting and doing different shooting drills that we do depending on how much basketball they're going to play that day, or different skill stuff. And the player development piece here is tremendous. And the stuff that the coaches here in Brooklyn are able to put together, I'm learning a ton every day and stealing stuff like you can imagine. These guys are truly masters of their craft with player development, and it's allowed me to kind of just sit back and observe and not take anything for granted. Like, all these guys are super intelligent and trying to literally make everything for the players as simple as possible, as detail oriented as possible, not wasting their time, not wasting their movement. And that's something for me that I've been really working at with, and kind of going along with each assistant and trying to learn from them every day, and doing different types of video projects for our guys, because we don't really know who's going to be on our roster, to be honest. And it's kind of breaking down our returning guys, because we have pretty much a whole new staff. So for me, it's kind of watching our own players that we'll have coming in and find out what they do well and what they might not do well, and how can we get them to where they'll maybe be an NBA player on a full guaranteed contract. That's kind of our goal for each of our players, and trying to learn how they learn, you know, sharing film with them and what do they see, and asking them questions, and trying to go through that process with them. And it's kind of working with our front office right now and trying to figure out what we're going to do with the remaining roster spots that we have for our G League team. We had tryouts last week. We'll have another tryout this upcoming Saturday, and trying to find pieces that all these guys are pretty talented that are coming out to a tryout, but we need to find guys that are going to fit around our core group of guys that we have returning. So it might not be the most talented guy, but it might be a guy that really needs to fit our culture and how we want to play the game. So we're trying to work on that stuff right now. And that's kind of how I've been approaching these past 3 weeks in a nutshell.
So what is the culture there with the Nets organization? What is it you guys are trying to build? How do you guys try to play? And who are some of the core guys that you're building around?
Yeah, so we are about as advanced basketball-wise as I think the NBA is. I think Houston Rockets might be the only exception. And just honestly, judging by shot distribution, I think we took the second most amount of threes in the league last year per average anyway. And we're trying to play fast. We're trying to take a ton of threes. Obviously, the corner three is huge. And then on the flip-flop, you want to take those away. So we're really trying to run a modern offense, very up-tempo. We have great guard play. Like, we have D'Angelo Russell, Spencer Dinwiddie. Those guys are going to kind of run the whole show. We got a lot of young core players, like Jared Allen, who I think is going to be a tremendous player over time. And honestly, we have a team that's kind of like a college team, how young these guys are. And the veterans like Damari Carroll, Kenneth Faried now with us, Ed Davis. These guys are all tremendous people. They're not just basketball players. These guys, top to bottom, every player within the organization, whether they're a 10-year vet or rookie, all these guys are really good people. I think our front office puts tremendous value on that. And from what I've experienced these 3 weeks since I've been in Brooklyn, has been eye-opening to me. Every single person, whether it's an athletic trainer, a strength and conditioning coach, an executive assistant to our general manager, every single person is nothing but the highest quality of people I've ever been around. And I'm not just saying that because I have this job. It's a culture, and some guys that I've known that come to watch our practice have actually echoed the same thoughts. They're like, wow, people here are so professional. You guys have this amazing culture. And I think it starts from the top down. And it's been fun already these 3 weeks working here. And I think the sky's the limit for this team, because I think the guys really like playing with each other. They're young. They're going to keep getting better. And our staff is really devoted to player development and getting these guys to play to their strengths and play in a new modern offense where you take a ton of threes and put pressure on the rim, whether it's driving it or really attacking transition, however you got to do it. So I'm just really excited to be here and kind of learn the culture of what the Nets really are about.
So is the whole Long Island Nets staff involved with the Brooklyn Nets training camp to try to, you know, cultivate a culture and a basketball system that they can emulate in Long Island?
Yeah, no, exactly. Luckily for us, our gym will be about only 40 miles away from Brooklyn where they play. So we're pretty close. And it looks like we'll have the rookies we drafted probably playing some of their games with us this year. And so we got to keep everything pretty much consistent upon what the Brooklyn team is doing as well as our Long Island team, and keeping the terminology the same and playing with the same idea that we're going to play fast, we're going to shoot a lot of threes, and we're going to take some things to the extreme maybe, or try different things and see if they work, see what sticks, what doesn't. And I think it's kind of in finding out what the guys are really good at doing, you know, and try to find these guys a role in the NBA and what their future might hold.
So training camp hasn't started yet. Have a lot of players been around the facility though?
Yeah, and that's what's really impressed me. The whole team, including all the guys that we've invited to training camp, have been in Brooklyn since I've been here. And they're always in the gym, they're in the weight room, they're playing pickup, and they're doing all this other stuff on their own. It's unbelievable to see how hard these guys are working, where I see all these guys on social media doing other stuff individually, you know, and to see these guys collectively as a group already in the gym and looking forward to training camp is, for me, has been a tremendous experience to see how hard these guys work and how coachable they are.
What's maybe the biggest difference in terms of player from the college level? I mean, obviously the talent, but aside from that, what's some of the noticeable differences?
I think the two things for me that have really stood out is obviously the athleticism and how big these guys are. It's just how quick guys are able to get off the ground, for example, and explode, and the twitch that they have. That's very apparent. But I think their work ethic and their habits are what really separates it. And seeing a guy, like Joe Harris, for example, who comes in the gym, and it could be something as simple as like a warm-up shooting drill, but everything is very, very well orchestrated by him. Like, he doesn't shortcut anything. His footwork is always tremendous. He's always going game speed. There's never a wasted rep. And I think you see that a lot in college. A guy's going to the gym and kind of dance around a little bit and get some shots up before he starts really going. But like, I think those are habits that you need to build. Like, every rep matters. And that's what I really gathered from these guys. And I know they're professionals, but they treat it like every little detail is vital to their success. And it's true. And watching them and how they operate and trying to really dive into it, like, what makes these players tick and what makes them good. And a guy like Joe Harris that was in the G League, now who just signed a 2-year contract with Brooklyn, it's because of those habits. There's no doubt about it. Like, how hard he works, how hard he plays. You know, I think a lot of guys should look to him that might be in the G League or might think about going to the NBA one day and say, like, wow, he, you know, how he carries himself and how hard he plays and how he kind of goes about his everyday work ethic is what makes him successful. And it's something people should be able to emulate, and just kind of how they want to see themselves as a future professional.
Well, and again, I think that speaks, you know, not only to the players, you know, credit, but also the culture that they've been able to build there in Brooklyn. Because I've talked to other guys, you know, in the NBA who coach, you know, at that level that have young teams, and they're not echoing those things. You know, they're not raving about how professional their guys are and how hard they work. You know, there's complaining about, you know, these guys just don't get it yet. They're young. It's going to take them time. They're coming into the facility with Taco Bell. You know, they don't, they're on their phone half the time, you know, while they're shooting. Yeah. You know, so to hear you rave about, you know, the professionalism there with such a young team, I think just goes back to what you said, the culture that your guys' front office has been able to build, which I'm sure is really exciting to be a part of. Sorry, go ahead.
Same thing. Like, I talk to a lot of the guys that are in the league, and one thing that everyone says to me is, wow, that's a great organization to work for. And I didn't really know what that meant till I got here and kind of see it firsthand. Every single person that says, wow, you're lucky to work for them, you're lucky. And being here, like, I get it now. Like, the people literally come first, and it's a family type atmosphere. And a lot of people say and preach family. You feel it when you come here. And it's something for me that I couldn't be more happy to be here. And I hope a lot of people can eventually find a spot like that for themselves, because for me, there's nothing, once you feel it, that you're more proud to go into work each day and happy to be there.
They need to include you on the pitch to free agents, because I'm ready to sign.
Yeah, no, I truly mean that. You know, I wouldn't even bring it up if it wasn't true. And it's awesome. You know, even the guys that I get to work with, the G League staff, these guys are tremendous people, first and foremost. And I think we're going to be able to get some things accomplished with our team, too.
What? Tell me some differences just in day-to-day life for you in the office from college compared to the NBA.
Oh yeah, that's definitely the difference. You know, everything is basketball centered, you know, and we come in the office every day and it's about, all right, we have workouts with these guys that we're just kind of taking through some stuff at 10 o'clock, say, and we're meeting at 8:30. Well, everything that we spend before that is devoted to what can we do to make this, whatever half hour that we have with player X, the most efficient 30 minutes that we can make it. And it's got to be well choreographed, well thought out, and get as many reps as possible. And we'll have at times 4 to 5 different people at a hoop for each individual player, and knowing that we're putting the effort into them and their success to literally devote it all to them. And for me, like, I wanted to be around basketball. That's what I really love, and the passion for it that everybody else in the organization shares. We literally spend all that time preparing for those upcoming workouts that we have with the guys. And that's kind of how it's focused around. And then what's awesome for me is we're trying to build a team. Like, we don't even know who's going to be on our team yet, but we're already putting down on our calendar in October what it's going to look like when we have these players. What's the drills going to look like? How are we going to devote each time? To the very small detail of, will we have music during this drill? And we want to make everything as perfect as we can do and still be able to adjust on the fly, obviously, because that's so much of what coaching is. But we spend a lot of time on what we're going to do, how we're going to build it, how we're going to get the buy-in for these guys, where it's kind of a selfish league where guys think if you put the ball in the hoop, you're going to get a contract. And to some extent, that might be true. But I think if you win games and do it the right way, I think everyone gets recognized. And so we're trying to figure out that balance between getting guys to play for each other, winning, and then hopefully be able to get those guys either a two-way contract or hopefully an NBA contract too. So we're spending a lot of time on that type of stuff right now and figuring out what we need and knowing who we'll have with our team and what type of player we want to fit in with our current guys. And what won't fit, you know, just because a guy puts the ball in the hoop doesn't mean he's the right fit to be a Long Island Net. And we're really trying to evaluate that and be meticulous as possible. And we're bouncing all ideas off of each other to try to figure out what's going to be the best avenue for us to be successful as a team and for these guys individually.
I love it. I love it. Jimmy, if people are interested in finding out more about the projects that you've done, where can they find that?
Yeah. So if you want to check out any of the videos that I have, definitely just go on YouTube and just type in Sideline OB Project. Any of those videos will pop up with my stuff on it. And any feedback people have on it, please feel free to give out. If anyone wants to share basketball ideas, I'm always looking for stuff. And trying to gather stuff and steal stuff is just like anybody else. So that stuff's all on YouTube. I definitely make it completely open to people to watch and look at and share ideas with. And I just really want to create a conversation with people out there that are like-minded. So that's kind of my goal.
And if people want to connect with you on social media, tell us your handle.
Yeah, it's just at Jimmy Oakman, JimmyOakman. And shoot, please give me a follow, shoot me a message. Love to talk hoops to anybody out there. I'm always trying to pick people's brains. You could be a middle school coach. I'm sure I'll be able to learn a lot more from you than you can imagine. So,
Jimmy, thanks so much, man. Best of luck. We'll be following you this season with the Nets. And, thank you so much for taking the time to get on the podcast.
Awesome. Thanks, Adam. I much appreciate it. Thank you.
All right.